everybody, Bill Buckmaster back with you, along with my buddy John. John engineering and producing the show, and together we welcome you to the Buckmaster program. It's Tuesday, May 31st, 2022, the final day of May. We're in our 12th year here on the radio, 34 years in TV and radio in Tucson. Our program broadcasting from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. The radio station is 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk, worldwide live listening at buckmastershow.com. The Buckmaster Show live line for all of our telephone interviews. Sponsored by Rincon Ventures, real estate and property management, but we do need to say and how grateful we are for our guest hosts, the guest hosts who are with us while Ann and I enjoyed a beautiful 10 days over in the Hawaiian Islands, the 50th state appropriately placed for our 50th wedding anniversary. So it all worked out, and I do want to say thank you to Ben Bueller Garcia. Thanks, Ben, for hosting what turned out to be three shows. Dan Gibson did a show. Ryan Hansen did a full travel hour, of which I was had a small part, calling and did a segment from overlooking Diamond Head on Waikiki. I can close my eyes and still see it. Matt Russell, thank you very much, Matt. Helped out, and Dan Shear. Dan did, let's see, four shows. So a big thank you to Dan. All right, let's go now on the live line to Tom Horn. Tom, an attorney, politician, Republican activist who served as the 25th Attorney General of Arizona from 2011 to 2015. Mr. Horn lost to Mark Brnovich in the Republican primary for Attorney General in 2014. Tom Horn served previously as the Arizona Superintendent of Public Instruction from 2003 to 2011. That's probably when I first met Tom, when he was running for the state school superintendent job, which he was elected to twice. Mr. Horn, Tom, how are you?
Hi, Bill. It's great to be on your program again.
Yeah, we're reconnecting, and here you are now in the midst of a three-way primary on the Republican side. Why do you want the job back?
Yes, you know, my friends are telling me I'm going backwards with my life after having been Attorney General, wanting to run for Superintendent of Schools again. But I feel very strongly that the schools are where our big problem is and where the future of our state and country is determined. And that's really what I want to work on.
Yeah, I was looking at the report from the KAET. They did a primary interview with you and your two opponents, and looks like you differ with your opponents on state's education funding. You actually think there's nothing wrong with putting more resources into our schools.
Yeah, I suppose it's unusual for a conservative Republican like myself, but I've always felt that we need more resources in our schools for our kids' education, but it has to go with accountability. And when I talk about accountability, I'm talking about two kinds of accountability. Academic accountability, be sure if we put in more resources, we're going to get better educational results for it. And financial responsibility, the money goes for teacher salaries and lower class sizes and not for administration.
And you've been involved with education and public education even before you reached the pinnacle of education in this state as the superintendent. But you were at a local school board.
Yeah, I was. I served on the third largest school district board for 24 years. Four of my kids were preschoolers, and I stayed long enough to hand the diploma to my youngest. And 10 of those years were as president. So as a member of president of my school board, I attended over 2,000 school board meetings. So I know a little something about what goes on at that level.
So what did you accomplish? Let's go back to that period where you were the school superintendent. You were preceded by Jaime Malera and then succeeded by John Hoopenthal. What do you think the Horn administration will be and was remembered for, Tom Horn?
Okay, I'll give you three examples. There are a lot more examples on my website if people want to look, tomhorn.com. But I'll give you three examples. First of all, I put a tremendous emphasis on academics. So when I left office, Arizona students performed above the national average on the SAT test, which is a national test that states cannot manipulate. But after I left, the people who succeeded me did not have the same emphasis on academics, and the test scores went down. And in recent years, all you've heard about is how terrible Arizona students are doing compared to the rest of the country. So we got to get the focus back on academics. That's number one. And I could talk more about that in a few minutes if you want me to. But number two is, as you may remember, in fact, your listeners in Tucson will remember this better than anywhere else in the state. But Tucson had a program called Ethnic Studies.
Oh, yeah.
A big portion of which was an explicit part of their curriculum was critical race theory. And my philosophy is that we need to teach our kids to treat each other as individuals. Race is not relevant to anything. We're all brothers and sisters under the skin. And in ethnic studies, and especially in critical race theory, that was part of the Tucson Ethnic Studies program, they teach the kids to emphasize their race, that the race is the most important thing about them. It's just the opposite of what I think our country's always stood for. And so I wrote a bill for the legislature to put a stop to the Tucson program. It passed my last year as superintendent, and then as attorney general, I enforced it, and facing a cutoff of funds, the Tucson School Board voted 4-1 to eliminate the program. So I think Republican voters today, I think their number one desire is somebody who is qualified to put a stop to critical race theory in our state, which has come back with a vengeance since I left office. And I'm that person because I did it once and I can do it again. The third thing I would mention is that when I took office, they still had bilingual education, even though an initiative had passed requiring that kids not speaking English be in English immersion rather than bilingual education. It wasn't enforced by my two predecessors. So I was the first one to enforce it. When I took office, under bilingual education, a pathetic 4% of kids became proficient in English in 1 year. After I implemented intensive English immersion, so at 4% a year, almost none of them would ever become proficient in English, and they would fail in our economy. After I brought in English immersion, we got the number up to 29%. At that rate, 3 or 4 years, almost everyone would become proficient in English. But notwithstanding that, last year the legislature came within a hair. This is a Republican legislature, came within a hair of bringing back bilingual education. And so I assure people, if I'm elected, we're not going to have bilingual education in our schools. We're going to have structured English immersion, so the kids coming here not speaking English are going to learn to speak English quickly so that they can succeed academically and succeed in our economy.
So when you left the attorney general position, that's like about 8 years ago, what have you been doing? Really working on the law practice? Is that what's been?
Yeah, I've been practicing law. You know, when you serve in statewide office, for me, it was an 80% cut in my income. So these past years, I've been able to kind of replenish my bank account, and I'm ready to go back into public service. And I'm so passionate about wanting to teach kids to treat each other as individuals, about getting the emphasis back on academics, that my friends might think I'm going backwards, but the schools are, to me, the most important thing for our future. China performs number one in international tests. The United States performs number 25. The future belongs to the educated. If we don't turn this around as a country, China's going to be the predominant power. They're going to be calling the shots. Imagine a world like that. And we're going to be the next third world country. We'll be another Ghana. So we have to get our focus on academics. The current superintendent, Catherine Hoffman, is focused on all kinds of other things, but not on academics. And we've got to get the focus back on academics, get our kids learning more, so they'll be ready for the economy of the future.
Do you think you'd have a pretty good shot of beating Ms. Hoffman?
I believe if my message catches on, I think a great majority of Arizona people want a focus on academics. They don't want bilingual education where the kids don't learn English. They don't want, laziness, which I think has crept into our education system, although there are a lot of dedicated teachers. And my my heroes are teachers who love the subject, science teachers who love science, math teachers who love math, and so on. But I think that, and you know, and there's some sideshows that I think people are shocked about. She wrote an op-ed in the Arizona Republic advocating that biological boys should be able to compete in girls' sports. And as a result of that, girls, you know, can't succeed competing against boys with their muscular bodies. And that would ultimately destroy girls' sports. And I think for everyone who cares about girls' sports, that's really a shocking position for the state superintendent to take. And you know, I would not allow it. I would say you compete. Girls can compete in their own sports so that they can have the ability to succeed and get college scholarships and be compliant with Title IX. I think it's a violation of Title IX to let boys invade girls' sports and make it so the girls can't succeed.
All right, Tom Horn, good reconnecting with you. Got to run. What's the website again?
TomHorn.com, Horn with an E at the end. TomHorn.com. And I'd love to have your people look at it. There's a lot of detail on there. My political advisor tells me I put in too much detail, but I think people are entitled to know what I've done, what I stand for, and what I will do if I'm elected.
Okay. Tom, good to talk with you. Thanks.
Great to talk with you, Bill, and glad to come back anytime you want me.
Thank you very much. Tom Horn in a three-way primary on the Republican side for Arizona Superintendent of Public Instruction. The Buckmaster Show. Always happy to return to Tucson when we've been away because we love, of course, Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Yes, I enjoyed some bakery goods over in the islands, but Steve does it right. He's still the premier baker as far as the Buckmaster household is concerned. Northeast Corner, Swan and Sunrise. Mona's Danish Bakery, open Tuesday through Sunday. Yes, they are now taking Monday off. And I almost said they weren't open today because I thought today was Monday. Because it feels like Monday because we were off for Memorial Day. But they're open right now for lunch. They open the doors at 6:30. So go by for lunch or you can still have breakfast. Say hi to Steve and the team for me. Their website's monasdanishbakery.com. And with me in studio, it's good to see him again, and he will tell me how the market is doing, and he just gave me a thumbs down. Well, but it's Tuesday. What do you expect? Shelley Fishman's next. Be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson. Tucson International Airport.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Now, Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary. Home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Shelley Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelley through buckmastershow.com or at shelleyfishman.com.
And here he is, my friend, Shelley Fishman. Shelley, you helped hold down the fort. A week ago.
It was bucking like mad. Yeah, and I just held it down.
You know, you were with Ben Bueller Garcia. You and Ben had a good conversation. You know, all we keep here, May has been crazy. Not as bad, I guess, as April with all the markets. But there are a few words that are talked about every day. Inflation, recession, and on it goes.
Well, that's right, Bill. What we're hearing is that inflation has really dominated the economics talk. And some people like Larry Summers are saying, I told you so. It doesn't seem to occur to anybody that he was right for the wrong reasons. We had an inflation report today on the Eurozone where inflation there is running at over 8%. I think it was 8.5% announced this morning. So the inflation is a result of several things. Certainly the pandemic, certainly the supply problems that went along with the pandemic, and now, of course, the war in Ukraine. And everybody's feeling it. And that inflation is going to need to be tempered somewhat. And that's the kind of the choices that the Fed needs to make about the economy now, and has begun to make those difficult choices. Now, some of us feel that the Fed runs the risk of going too far in raising interest rates too quickly. Others feel that they need to do it, more quickly and really throw the country into recession in order to get inflation under control. I don't know which of them is right. I mean, there's pain that will be felt for a longer period of time if inflation is allowed to continue for longer than it possibly could if the economy were again thrown into recession sooner rather than later. However, recession is no fun for anybody, for everybody either. So those are the balancing acts that Jerome Powell has to deal with at the Fed. At the same time, we have some very, very unusual things going on in the economy. The economy right now is experiencing almost full employment.
Yes.
It's experiencing, with the exception of the first quarter, it's experiencing growth that's been higher than we've experienced in decades. We have consumers spending large amounts of money. I mean, we hear about consumer sentiment, the way they measure it, being more guarded now than it was, say, a month or two ago.
But they're still spending.
They're still spending like crazy.
Christmas is here.
You see what's happening with the airlines. You see what's happening with travel.
Oh.
So you scratch your head and go, what in the world is going on? And I think the answer is that this is such an unusual time that using older models to try to determine what's going to happen
It
really doesn't work. It leaves you kind of more, to use a comedian's expression, more befuddled than before. So what you have to really look at as an investor is what are companies saying about the future, and how are they predicting that they're going to kind of march forward in terms of their medium and short-term profit forecasts. And what we're seeing, and this is why the market has been so volatile, is it's a mixed story. Those companies that are having continuing problems with their supply chain are saying, because we don't have the ability to turn out product that meets the demand for that product, then we're going to have to cut back on our profit forecasts. You also get a number of companies who do business overseas and are suffering from the fact that demand overseas has been unpredictable. You get, you know, the effects of I think 30%, and I said this to Ben last week, 30% of the consumed calories in the world are produced by Russia and Ukraine.
That is very interesting.
Yeah.
30%
of the consumed calories in the world. So that includes people who are really dependent upon the produce that is produced out of Ukraine and Russia. And Ukraine is not allowed to export right now. So you have the potential for real economic turmoil in the undeveloped or underdeveloped world. And that's got companies that depend upon, you know, doing business with those economies really cautious right now. So you get, you know, last week people were thinking, well, maybe we'll see an end to this war and things will be better. And some of the results for the first quarter, you know, turned out to be pretty good.
Yeah.
And then you got some other companies saying, yeah, but I can't get parts. I can't get circuit boards. I can't get the things that I need to produce what I need. You also have this whole discussion right now, and I think it's a very useful discussion, about whether or not we should be dropping the tariffs that were imposed, the import tariffs that were imposed mostly during the Trump administration on places like China and Canada. And those increased taxes are now being passed along to consumers.
Right.
The reason is consumers have the money to pay them, and mm-hmm. so companies are less reluctant mm-hmm. to raise prices to cover those import tariffs. I think you'll see the pressure on the Biden administration will begin to ease those tariffs, even though the politics around easing tariffs on China right now, it's just going to cause a hullabaloo, but I think we have to do that.
It's almost like what I'm hearing you say, we're in an economic anomaly.
Oh.
That this is a hybrid or an anomaly where you have the pandemic, you've got a war in Europe for the first time since the end of World War II, a land war. I mean, this is a crazy market that maybe the previous models just don't work in predicting.
That's exactly right, Bill.
Yeah.
You know, economics has always been a science that is less scientific and more emotional. And you've always had, you know, kind of the right and the left in terms of the leading economists in the country taking different positions on what can best and worst affect the economy. But that's at a period of time when at least we have historical models that you can rely on. You say, well, when this happens,
yeah.
the other thing is likely to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You can argue around the edges, but there was some consistency in approach. We don't have that right now because we've never had a war and a pandemic, at least not in the modern, you know, modern world, a war and a pandemic in a world that is so interrelated economically. Remember, this whole internationalism, this whole idea that the world is joined with, you know, all countries in terms of how we produce and consume goods. That is something new. Now, it was working just fine for about 30 years, but now that we have supply chain problems, and we have, even in countries that haven't become autocratic, we have some emphasis more on self-production, on bringing under control the things we are most reliant upon, then what we're seeing is this whole global world order, at least in economics, being questioned. And that is causing, as you would expect, some uncertainty in markets. And that's resulting in the volatility you're seeing. I am sticking with my forecast. I think the markets for 2022 will still be up, and I think that number is going to be in the range of about 6%. We've got a long way to go, but then again, you know, we've got two and a half more quarters to get there.
And I'm going
to
pick up on this 30% of consumed calories about Russia and the Ukraine with our UA agronomist, Dr. Jeff Silvertooth. He's next.
And perfect.
He has traveled extensively in the Ukraine and Russia, and he knows how critical that wheat supply is from the Ukraine. And unfortunately, there's no harvest going on, or what is being harvested, the
stored.
Russians
right.
are taking it out of the port at Odessa and moving it to the Soviet, said the Soviet Union. There you go. Back to the good old days, or bad old days, or whatever. Thanks, Shelley. It's great to see you.
Bill, have a great
again.
Week, and welcome home.
Thank you very much.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Green Things, a go-to place for everything for your garden. And here we are waiting for the rains to come. Over in Asia, they call this time of year the monsoon turnaround time. And I think it's very appropriate for Tucson because June, it's going to be hot and it's going to be dry or drier. Do you believe we've had like less than a half an inch of rain, recordable rain, this year? I mean, it is so dry out there. So anyway, go by Green Things, and the knowledgeable staff there will point you in the right direction for some beautiful plants, some color for the garden that will do well when, I'm not going to say if, when the rains do come, hopefully, in a few weeks. It's greenthingsaz.com, and their sister business on site is ZocaloVillage.com, 13-acre site, 3384 East River Road. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. With me in studio for his regular visit, we try to get Jeff Silvertooth on the show, I'd say every four to six weeks. Dr. Silvertooth, professor and extension specialist in agronomy and soil science in the Department of Environmental Science at the University of Arizona. He served on the UA faculty and worked statewide since 1987. This man is highly honored in his profession. He's been recognized as a fellow for both the American Society of Agronomy and the Soil Science Society of America. Jeff, how are you?
Very good, sir. Thank you. How are you?
It's good to see you. We've both been traveling. And do you believe the airports, the planes are packed? You flew back to Oklahoma City for that big shindig to honor your 86-year-old father, a professor of education at Oklahoma State University. You went back to Stillwater. How did that go?
It was very nice. Yeah, very nice. Dad had a great time. I think he's still on cloud nine from that deal. But yeah, after about almost 40 years of serving as an elementary educator and a principal in Wichita Public School System, Wichita, Kansas, he was recognized for his commitment to education at the elementary level. And he's a worthy recognition, and he's very proud of that.
And he was, you know, a well-known teacher. Now look at you. You've had kind of follow. Now, I mean that in a good way, of course. Look at you.
Yeah, look at me.
Oh, maybe it didn't come out the right way. No. Look at you. You have followed in many ways in your father's footsteps as an educator.
Yeah.
Look at you. You've devoted your whole life to education.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's kind of ironic. You know, when you're a kid, you don't think you think you're going to do something different, you know?
Yeah.
And I have, very different, taken on a completely different, you know, direction in life. My career, but there is a similarity, a commonality to that as an educator, certainly. My mother was an educator as well, so there's a lot of symmetry to that.
Well, I was thinking about you because we've talked about how every land-grant university has a soil, an extension, agriculture extension program. We were over on Oahu in Honolulu, and of course the University of Hawaii is over there.
Mm-hmm.
They've even got an extension one.
Oh, absolutely. I've had colleagues that have worked there and have thought they still do work there, but I've had quite a few colleagues over the course of my career that have worked over there in Hawaii in very similar capacities as we do here. They just deal with different situations as we do in every state in the country.
I'll tell you, there are two boutique kind of industries that are blooming agriculturally over in the islands. One is cacao, I hope I pronounced that correct, which is the origins of chocolate.
Right.
And they have a very thriving now, kind of a boutique industry going on in producing some of the finest chocolate, at least some of the chocolate I've had is finest in the world.
Right.
And then the coffee industry is re-emerging.
Right.
Not just on the Big Island, Kona, of course, that's famous, but on Oahu, too, on the North Shore.
That's what I understand.
Yeah.
I've sampled both.
Uh-huh.
I haven't been there, but I've sampled both the chocolate and the coffee. And as one who appreciates both, I will agree they're very good quality.
I will tell you, and we've been over there a few times, I have never seen Oahu as green. They have had a lot of rain, just as green as French Polynesia or Tahiti. Mm-hmm. And then we come home to this, this historic drought.
Right.
I mean, we're looking at a situation here. We not only need the rain this time, Jeff, we desperately need the rain.
Well, we need the rain in southern Arizona, and where we also need the rain or snowfall or precipitation is in the Colorado River watershed, which supplies water for about 40% of our, what's 40% of our water supply in this state. And it is a huge supplying source for 40 million people in the desert Southwest, 7 states in the United States, 2 states in Mexico, 30 Indian tribes, Indian reservations, and close to 6 million acres of cropland. So that water is vital to us in the West. And that watershed, which gets most of its precipitation out of snowpack, out of Colorado and Wyoming, actually. And they're definitely, that season's pretty much passed, and we're not getting the runoff that we were hoping to have before. So that's a serious situation in the western, southwestern United States. And then, of course, here in southern Arizona, as you refer to, it's extremely dry here in Tucson, this Sonoran Desert area, which doesn't contribute a lot to the Colorado River watershed per se, but it's still important for us in terms of our habitat, our just general environment here.
Have you ever seen it this dry since you've been in state since 87?
No, sir. In fact, climatologists are saying this is the driest, this is the most severe mega drought in 1,200 years. Mm-hmm. So that definitely extends my 35 in Arizona. But, you know, it's unprecedented in our experiences out here.
Before I forget, and I want to go back to something our financial consultant, Shelley Fishman, was talking about with the Ukraine and, mm-hmm. and the food situation. Mm-hmm. That is not getting any better over there, that situation. And I guess the harvest is basically come to a halt.
Right.
What's being harvested is the Russians are now shipping out of the port of Odessa.
Right. Yeah. The major crop that's in question in Ukraine is winter wheat. And winter wheat is coming due for harvest here right away, normally. The reports that I have read, Bill, indicate that the farmers are not proceeding with harvest because of the disruptions of the war. Plus, they can't move the crop from last year out of the country into the markets. And that, again, goes back to what you just referred to in the Black Sea, those large ports, mm-hmm. Odessa, and there's a few other ports there along the Black Sea.
But the Russians control those ports.
Mostly, yes. Mostly. And they're primarily got that choked off there right now.
Uh-huh.
That seems to be part of their strategy. And then looking at Ukraine, if you wanted to cripple Ukraine, that would be an effective approach to do so. But that's what's happened agriculturally. And I think it's also important to remember that with the Ukraine and Russia together, they represent 1/3 of the U.S., or not the U.S., but the global winter wheat crop that goes out onto the export market. So you're basically having a restriction on both of those right now, but you're particularly coming out of Ukraine, which has been historically, it still is today, the breadbasket of Europe. It provides something like 40% of the wheat crop, the wheat that goes exported into a lot of places in North Africa and other parts of Asia.
We could be looking at, and maybe already are, food shortages in Africa.
I just read a report the other day that that's beginning to happen already right now. And of course, then that's causing an escalation in prices and other grains that pushes those people out of the market because of their economic constraints, and particularly North Africa and the Middle East, in parts of Central Asia as well.
Is the United States the leader in the winter wheat crop?
The United States is one of the largest in the world, but you mm-hmm. put that just those two nations together, Russia and Ukraine, they represent 1/3 mm-hmm. of winter wheat.
Shortages for the United States, that will not impact us.
Not necessarily, but it will increase. It is increasing grain prices. We're seeing increasing grain prices, but not only because of the Ukrainian situation, but because of just supply and demand. Grain prices for corn, wheat, beans, et cetera, have been going up. But those forces that you're describing here with regard to winter wheat, particularly in the Russians and Ukrainian limitations, that's driving up the wheat prices. That's helping drive those prices up.
Here in Arizona, the meat prices have been going up too. What's going on with that?
Similar connection. You know, cattle, there's a drought relationship in a lot of the West. Yeah. I was back in Oklahoma. It looks wet and green to me coming from here, but they're having they're experiencing a drought. So all across the West, there's been a reduction in cattle herds, ranchers are seeing poor range conditions, and ranch cattle usually go off into feedlots to be finished just in the last few months of their time before they go into the market for slaughter. And as a result of the diminished herds, what we call liquidation of some of the herds on the range, there's less cattle going into the feedlots, less ranchers are putting cattle into feedlots because of the high grain prices, and they're not sure they can get the recovery on their costs to get that animal back into market. So both of those factors combined, as I understand it, are causing a limitation. We're probably going to see a reduction in the supply of beef and poultry and several other, you know, swine meat products coming into the market in the United States. And that, of course, supply and demand, once again, the demand is there. Supply will be limited, and that will anticipated. Well, consumer will see higher prices for those products in the coming months.
Does the meat in Arizona come from feedlots in Arizona, or is it out of state?
Both, to a large extent. You know, central Arizona is kind of the, actually, there's areas out there they call it Cowtown, Arizona, out in Pinal County. And of course, that's the place that's been most severely hit with the water reductions because of the Central Arizona Project reductions off the Colorado River because of the drought. And so that's reducing grain production out in central Arizona, which feeds the cattle in those feedlots. And so, yes, a lot of the beef that we get out of, we receive in Arizona comes out of these feedlots, but it goes into a larger market, global or national market, where it gets moved around. But yeah, it's a large supply here, right here in Arizona, and dairy products as well in central Arizona.
That's one of the reasons I like having you on the show, because, you know, most of us, we go to the supermarket and we'll just like, oh, there's a nice filet mignon. We don't really think about how that piece of meat wound up in your supermarket. Just by what you were explaining, that these managers of these feedlots and all these things, they have to do all this timing, and the drought is doing a huge number on all of this.
Well, that's a good point. That's a very good point. All those points are good points. And one of the first ones I think is important to us in conversations like this is the relationship that most of us have to agriculture as Americans. You know, we're a nation that's about 83% urban right now, and rapidly increasing in our urbanization. Arizona is a state that has 90% urban residents. And what that translates to really for all of us is that we have less and less connection to agriculture and less understanding of where our food comes from. We're also living in a society today in American culture where we have most people are three or four generations removed from the farm. So it becomes an abstraction very easily. Mm-hmm. Now, those of us that work in agriculture realize there's less than 1% of the population actually involved in production agriculture, but it's producing food for not only the nation of about 350 million, but also an export market that's very important for the United States, and it's important for Arizona. Mm-hmm. And that really comes down to our questions about how much water do we have, how much water do we need, and then where do we put it? You know, there's a lot of ramifications that come stemming off of those water relations, but it does come back to agriculture, and it comes back to the realization that people need to have, in my view, as of course I have a bias as an agronomist and agriculturist myself, but to improve our understanding as the general populace of where does our food come from, and how is this produced? And there's a lot of myths and there's a lot of mistruths being thrown around out there about agriculture, but I think that's one of the important parts of conversations like this, is let's try to get the facts on the table for people to understand.
Yeah, let's pick up on that after the break, because I got to tell you, and you know it, and a lot of our listeners know it, your industry are viewed as the bad guys and women in so many cases. Mm-hmm. Let's pick up on that. Let's take a break. We're with Dr. Jeff Silvertooth. Be right back on the Buckmaster Show.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready.
Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority. At Tucson International Airport, we're nonstop supporting jobs and prosperity as an economic engine for our entire region. From an innovative and touchless passenger experience to earning the GBAC Star Accreditation, the golden standard for cleanliness, our team is ready to welcome you back to Tucson International Airport. Begin your journey with us. We're nonstop for you, Southern Arizona.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Buckmaster back in the saddle. Feels good to be back on the air after a break, a nice break to celebrate our 50th wedding anniversary. Yes, Ann and I were married at a very young age. Well, not that young. Anyway, Jeff Silvertooth is with me, UA agronomist. Jeff, you know it's time now to talk about, we're going to talk a little bit about New Mexico. We both like New Mexico. Not only like it, we love it over there, don't we?
Absolutely. Beautiful city.
Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, one of our great sponsors. We send so many of our listeners over there for, usually it's a weekend getaway, Jeff, and it isn't that far. Basically 3 hour, a little more than three, maybe depending on where you are east of Tucson. Easy to do. You hit I-10, get to Lordsburg, and then you basically take a left up into the Silver City area and up to that 5,000 to 7,000 foot elevation, kind of similar to Denver, Colorado in elevation. And that makes a difference with the climate.
Oh, my goodness. Elevation's everything out here. Yeah.
And the Gila National Wilderness is there, the world famous cliff dwellings. Anyway, that visit southwestnewmexico.org to continue your planning for a nice trip over there. Jeff Silvertooth is professor and extension specialist in agronomy and soil science in the Department of Environmental Science at the University of Arizona. He's a regular on our show, one of two dozen contributors. He's the contributor on agriculture. Before the break, we were talking about how many people in this look upon your profession as guys wearing black hats. The bad guys. When it comes, they not only are they using too much water, but when it comes to the way they are producing their crops, they are not being environmentally sensitive.
Well, I would take very sharp exception to that, and I'd base that on facts. There's an old saying that facts may be facts, but perceptions become reality, and this is a good example where people have these perceptions, and agriculture, unfortunately, has been villainized. Now, the truth of it is, in agriculture, we've had some mistakes, and we've done some things in the past that we've improved, we needed to improve upon, and we have. You know, I've been in this state for 35 years working in production agriculture through my capacities with the University of Arizona. And in this time that I've been here, I can attest to the fact that our agricultural systems have improved radically in the Southwest and really across the country. You know, I came into working professionally in agriculture in the mid-1970s. And if you contrast the mid-1970s, when I came in and working as an agronomist in the field out in the High Plains, to where we are today, I mean, it's radically different and extremely safe today in comparison to what we were doing before. For example,
the type of go ahead.
Yeah, well, a good example would be back in the day where I was in the it was in the 70s, technologies that we had to control insect pests primarily related to insecticides called carbamates and organophosphates. Now, those are nerve toxins, and the nerve toxins that work on insects, our nervous system as human beings is very similar physiologically as insects, just we're a larger animal. But when you're in the field working regularly, you have that exposure to those materials. And I was involved in making recommendations to when to spray, how to spray, what to use. And so we were extremely conscious of going into the fields, myself and the crop scouts that worked with me. But even at all the precautions that we had, we'd take blood samples beginning and the end of every season. And you could see where we'd had the exposure from our blood levels with regard to the diagnostic characteristics from getting those blood samples.
Aerial spraying, are you talking about?
Most of it was, yes.
Yeah.
Now you fast forward ahead, and where we are today in the 35 years we've been here, we've radically reduced our insecticide and pesticide applications. On the average, it was about 15 per year. And a lot of crops, irrigated crops here, and particularly cotton crops, long season summer crops out here in the desert, and that's less than one now.
Wow!
And it's less than one, and plus the pesticides, herbicides, insecticides that go out today are really safe for us as mammals. They're very specific. They're surgically oriented physiologically for the insect pest in question. They're very safe. As a matter of fact, the statistics show most pesticide contamination today comes in the home. Or someone sees some ants or some bugs, and they want them out now.
They spray the whole place.
They bomb their homes, and basically infuse themselves with a pesticide exposure that's dangerous. In the field, in contrast, where it's much safer and cleaner today. So we don't have those problems today. Also, in the past 35 years, we're using less water to produce crops. We're using less land, less fertilizer, less pesticides. It's a story of good success. The food, the produce we have in the market, even if it's not organic, is clean.
Yeah.
USDA inspects it several times over, and they're rigorous in those inspections. So we have the benefit as Americans for an abundant, readily available, relatively cheap food supply, and it just never ceases to amaze me to walk in the produce section of our stores here in Tucson, Arizona, and be overwhelmed by the beauty and the abundance of the produce and the food that we have here.
Gee, I was reflecting on one of my early stops in the broadcasting business was Visalia, California, which is the county seat, as you know, Jeff, of Tulare County, and one of the bread baskets of the world,
right.
The San Joaquin Valley. And I remember this would have been like 1973, and right next to the apartment we were renting was a field, and I remember them doing all that crop spraying, and I'm thinking, maybe I should have had a blood test when we first moved in and then when we left the place.
Right.
I mean, who knows what they were using there in 1973.
Well, in 73, they were using the similar materials I was describing in the 70s, and I was in the same time out in the High Plains of western Kansas. And what we used to check on our blood test was with an enzyme called cholinesterase, and that basically facilitates the synapse on nerve endings in all of us as humans, as mammals, and even insects as well. And those cholinesterase levels get reduced as a function of that exposure. So you probably had some of it.
I got some exposure, I'm sure.
Probably some, but today you could be by those same fields and you'd be clean and safe as you and I are sitting in this office. Possibly safer.
Yeah, who knows? So generally, getting back to our situation with the water, the tier one, we are in effect right now. Tier two comes when?
Well, it's all predicated by the level of water on the dam at Lake Mead in Boulder Dam. And when that water level dropped below 1,075 feet above sea level on that dam last summer, and the Bureau of Reclamation recognized that was going to be imminent by the end of the year, we had, based on agreements that came through in 2019 for the drought contingency plan for all the lower basin states agreed, we came down to a reduction of 512,000 acre feet in Arizona. The next level is 1,050 feet.
That's not that far away.
No, we're close to it. We're probably going to hit it this year.
Oh, boy. All right, Jeff Silvertooth, good to see you. We'll see you in July. Be safe in your travels. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you.
It's good to be back on the Buckmaster Show. That's going to wrap it up. I almost said for our Monday edition. No, but it is Tuesday. Tomorrow's Wednesday. We'll be back in 23 hours. On behalf of Dr. Silvertooth and John, always doing a great job on the other side of the glass. See you tomorrow.